and welcome to the OMPEV podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy with some of the world's leading commentators. My name is Kat Asita, Deputy Head of Research in OMPEV. Today, we are going to talk about something a little bit different from our usual coverage, but something still very relevant to all of our listeners. We're going to talk about COVID-19 and how it is affecting the workforce of financial institutions, including how this might be impacting diversity and inclusion initiatives. This is an offshoot of OMPEV's Gender Balance Index, an annual research project that covers the lack of gender diversity in financial institutions. I'm very pleased to welcome our guests today. We have Sophie Dabol-Roloff, Chief Operating Officer of the European Stability Mechanism. Welcome, Sophie, and I believe you are releasing a blog on the ESM website today, touching on some of the things we're going to discuss, so that's perfect timing. We also have Emmanuel Dossmann, Partner and Global Head of Banking at Mazars. Welcome, Emmanuel, and thanks for being here. So I'm just going to jump straight into it. I'm going to ask both of our guests here today about how the pandemic has impacted their operations. I'd like to hear about how your organizations adapted to the remote working environment that we all find ourselves in. And perhaps you could also share if there were any practices or policies that you already had in place that made that transition a little bit smoother. Perhaps, Sophie, we can start with you.
Sure. Thank you, Kat. I think it's fair to say that this pandemic crisis and the move to enhance telework by large parts of our organization over an extended period of time now is, of course, an extreme test of our organizational readiness and resilience. Even also for me personally, the pandemic posed a special challenge because only on the 1st of January this year, I had assumed leadership of the ESM's incident management team. And well, then the COVID-19 then still seemed somewhat far away. But when then the crisis hit home, I must say we greatly benefited from having already invested in our organizational readiness. What do I mean by that? So is that firstly, telework was not new to us. And secondly, we also already had a so-called pandemic response plan in place. So in relation to telework, also prior to COVID-19, our staff already had the possibility to telework. And I would say it's approximately or almost 90% of our staff made use of this opportunity either on a regular or more occasional basis. So accordingly, all our people were already well equipped with laptops, mobile devices, and our systems and network were prepared also for such an extended telework scenario. Even when we saw COVID-19 coming closer, one evening in February, we even carried out an all-staff stress test whereby our IT system or team tested how robust our technology was, how our networks would behave, or whether they would withstand such a surge in data traffic. So we were well prepared. And also regarding the pandemic response plan, we already in 2013 implemented such a pandemic response plan with reflecting lessons learned from earlier viruses. And this plan actually provided us with a blueprint for addressing the first issues. And these ranged then from restricting business travel to reviewing contingency arrangements of our key service providers so that we could ensure continuous service. And I think that has also proved to be extremely useful to guide us through the initial stages of our crisis response. So in a nutshell, I think while the sudden transition from all working together in our office building to a network of homes has certainly not been without a challenge, having these arrangements in place enabled us to really move quickly and smoothly to a full telework scenario in March at the peak of the first wave. And I would say even more importantly, more to keep our staff safe.
Yeah, that sounds like it was a huge task for you specifically, but it sounds like you were prepared for it. And there were steps that you took that made it a little bit easier. Now, I'm going to move to Emmanuel. Now, the reality of teleworking is not actually something that's new to a professional service firm like Mazars. I think a lot of your employees were already doing that. So can you describe what might have changed, if anything, during that period when most organizations were switching to remote work?
Yes, actually, professional service firms do have a way of working which is by nature quite remote. So I won't say that 100% of our staff are used to work remotely, but 90% of them are used to work at clients' offices. There are consultant people, CPA, accountant. So they are working load from usually client places and not from our own offices. It's quite rare for us to be at the office. We are more at our client's office. But thing that changed is the stay-at-home orders in many countries that prevented people to go to their clients. And they had to, instead of working from some offices anywhere, working from home. And that's a big difference. So working from an office, even if it's a shared office, the thing about WeWork or any other places like this, is really different from working from home. Working in your own apartment house is a bit different. That's the first thing. And we experiment that every day. Wi-Fi issues could be something important for everyone. Connecting to VPNs as well. But those are the things that were not happening before and that starts to happen when you're having 7 days a week or 5 days a week. Actually, it's 5 days a week working from your place. However, you're right. One thing which is true is that we haven't changed everything. So we were used to that. We still do. And people that were in place with, I will say, permanent seats in our own offices were having the ability to work from home 1 or 2 days a week. So they were also already used to work from home. So there is a long-term tendency for us to be remote people. So the shock was not that high.
I see. So I think that's an example of how the pandemic affects us in different ways, depending on the nature of your organization and the nature of your business. But I think something that is probably common across different kinds of organizations is the difficulty of having to balance remote working or teleworking with household responsibilities. In the context of lockdowns, in the context of reduced mobility or restrictions on physical movement. And that is something that we've observed really across industries and across jurisdictions. So I think I'm going to ask Sophie, how have your employees coped with this challenge and how are you as an organization supporting them through these difficulties?
No, indeed. I think that was certainly one of the major challenges. I think for us, it was important to take pulse. So we have in late September, I think it was, we conducted a survey to look into how this extensive pandemic-related teleworking affected our staff and also our ways of working. First thing to say is that I was actually greatly reassured to learn that our staff in general thinks that ESM managed the crisis well and they feel safe. Also, the perception of telework by staff has changed positively. Our staff tends to feel very productive working from home, and this is mainly due to more flexibility in working schedules, less time in commuting, less distractions, and also better work-life balance, including time for family and leisure. The survey, however, also showed that the ideal conditions for productivity are not identical for everyone. So some of our people acknowledged, and I think Emmanuel just also mentioned that, is that the internet connectivity or even the comfort of furniture impeded their productivity. Others then tackled distractions such as the kids at home, other family members working in the same space, or the blurred lines between personal and professional life. Here I can say that fortunately balancing work and caregiving duties has been on our agenda for some years now, so already before the crisis. The support of mothers, fathers, and other staff members who have caring responsibilities has been an important focus of our policies and practices. For example, we have very attractive parental and paternity leave conditions, which aim at making it easier for women to combine childcare responsibilities and a career, and for men, in turn, to then also increasingly provide family support and to ensure that childcare is not solely a women's job. So I think that was already very high on our agenda and has also now served us well. So that is an important part. And then also during this crisis, what we did is to further enhance these policies and practices by, for example, allowing for increased flexibility in work arrangements to indeed deal with these competing duties, also introducing short-term part-times, providing special leave in COVID-19 related hardship cases. So that is with regards to more the arrangements we put in place. But what I would also like to mention that in addition to the difficulty of balancing such remote working with household duties in the context of lockdowns, I think also one of the complex challenges is also for us as an employer is to manage the emotional well-being. Because while we see from the survey that the majority of our staff seems to cope well, there is also little doubt that not knowing how the pandemic will play out, and as it now also drags on, the situation is taking its toll on the emotional well-being of our people. And therefore, in addition to our primary objective of keeping our staff physically safe, ensuring mental health and well-being is also a priority for our leaders. And here we can say that while we, for example, already had things like an employee assistance program in place, we have now also introduced instant counseling services, an ad hoc coaching for managers who may need to deal with difficult emotional situations in their teams. We also organize several online trainings, virtual team workshops to help us enhance our resilience. And in addition to these programs, we also created many opportunities and organized several social activities to stay virtually connected, to demonstrate our care for each other, our families, and for society. At this very moment, we, for example, have our Operation Winter Delights, we call it, where we organize virtual year-end activities, including auctions for a good cause, a baking event for our ESM children, a corona-proof center drive-in, and so on. And this is really mainly to make sure that we stay connected to our staff, that we show our care, and this, that we support them through these difficult times. And I think this sense of solidarity and this sense of belonging is worth so much, especially in these difficult times.
That's so true. We and OMFIF obviously have had to transition to an entirely virtual environment, but we still manage to have our weekly get-togethers. We organize Zoom quizzes. It's in the little things that you're able to make employees and staff members feel that you still have those relationships, even if we are all in different places. I'm going to ask Emmanuel now to perhaps comment on some of these things, especially from the perspective of a parent and as a father who is having to share responsibilities. I think there is a perception that women or mothers tend to take up a lot of the household responsibilities just because of sometimes conventions or traditions in certain societies. And that's something that we observe in a lot of places, regardless of how progressive a country might be. So I was hoping to ask Emmanuel, from his perspective as a father, is this something that you think is true or is fair? Or are you finding that parents, are, whether they're mothers or fathers, are also having to take a bigger burden when it comes to household work?
That's a very good question. Thank you, Kat. I will start with a caveat. I would like to see some quantitative data around this, because I'm from a more statistic background and I train with maths, but, and I don't have actually. So I will just be able to give you empirical examples of what I saw and what I lived. So that will be quite personal and maybe not scalable and replicable to anyone. So what I saw, not only in my industry, but also with some of my clients, which are in the financial services space, so banking mainly, is actually parenthood and the way you provide care to children change a little, because we were limited in our ability to outsource tasks or to have third parties coming and helping, like let's say a nurse or a nanny, to have someone doing your house cleaning, so to have your cleaners coming. So it was about rethinking the whole daily schedule. When you had to stay at home, restaurant being closed, bar being closed, no way to have a sandwich outside of your kitchen. So it was about doing your own laundry. You see what I mean?
Schools and nurseries or kindergartens were also closed. So that meant that...
That's really depending on the countries. So we will certainly see, if we gather data from several countries in Europe and elsewhere, that the consequences will be different in places where you have strict lockdown, like Italy, Spain, France, and in countries where you have a kind of soft lockdown, like originally was Germany and the US, for instance, which was very soft lockdown at the very beginning. We will see different things in terms of impact. But in the countries where you have those, I would say, stricter position in terms of stay at home, and with restaurant being closed, with school being closed, kindergarten being closed, and when you're a family, you have to rethink your organization. And as you are parents, you have to share responsibility. And this is what I saw, basically. I saw men and women reorganizing their daily work to make sure they can teach the kids day long. So in the morning for the man or in the afternoon, whatever, and vice versa. So someone's cooking Monday and Wednesday and the other one cooking on Tuesday and Thursday, but organizing yourself in a different way, which was more balanced, I would say, than it used to be, actually. I saw more, again, maybe that's a personal angle, but I saw more men taking part of the daily work at home, being more committed. And I think that was a very good experience, by the way, for many men to stay at home. Because they were able to do things that they were not doing anymore, or they were less doing. So that was, in that way, I think, very positive. On the other way, that's something also which has to be put in perspective with what was the role of the parents? What was the job of the parents when you have to share those responsibilities? I mean, if one parent were able to work remote while the only one was not, because, for instance, he was a waiter, or he was a clerk, or let's say a member of an airline company, a crew member. That changed a little the way you organize yourself. If there is someone which is able to work at home and the other one is not working, of course, the balance of responsibilities and how you organize childcare can change. So that, I think that was the big adjustment. Just to finish, because we have quite a young staff. We are a professional service firm. We are a young consultant. We're just after first job after graduation. So, you know, and one thing which has been mentioned by Sophia, which is really important, is mental health. And when you have singles staying at home for days, weeks alone, it's very difficult to make sure everyone's safe. So having the daily communications like you were having at Tom Phipps, certainly Sophia was having with team, is really critical, and making sure everyone's okay. That's very important. And I think people here, whatever the diversity concern was, it was really important to take care of people and make sure you can still organize a kind of social life in your firm, in your company. This is really important to socialize despite distance.
What I'm getting from this is that regardless of the makeup of your household, whether you are young, old, whether you have children, whether you don't, I think the pandemic has brought us unique challenges, but all of these can also be addressed by our organizations or our companies, making sure that we can stay connected and support each other throughout those unique challenges. Certainly that's something that we've seen in OMFIF, and from what I'm hearing from both of you, it's something that you're also looking out for in your respective teams. So I'm going to go back to Sophie, and you could tell us about what has been the most important lesson for you during this crisis. I mean, you've walked us through a lot of the things that you've implemented in the ESM, but perhaps you could leave us with just a big lesson that you can leverage on in the future, as hopefully we don't face anything as bad as this, but in case there are future crises or stress points for our organizations, what would you say is something important?
A very, very interesting question, Kat. Perhaps before I go into it, I would just like to build on one point which Emmanuel also mentioned, and I must say, when listening to him, I was also thinking how privileged I have been in this whole situation, because while I was personally in my role as a COO here at ESM, I was, of course, in the front line. I was not working remotely, but, for example, my husband was working remotely, and with our two boys at home, he was indeed increasingly taking care of everything. And I must say, I felt really privileged by that, almost that he could indeed then take over all these tasks. And I'm sure that this is not for all households the same, but here it was indeed very interesting learning that you then see that indeed that balance had shifted from him actually doing all the household tasks. And I'm not saying that I'm a big fan of his cooking. It is an interesting shift. So I'm not saying that this applies to many households, but for us, it was actually an interesting experience with the dad taking more care of the kids and the household tasks. But now back to your question, indeed, what for me was the most important lesson in this crisis I think it's, to be honest, there's so many, many things that I've learned in these last months. I see this actually as, referred to it once as the world's largest work from home experiment. And I think whatever the industry one is in, I think we can all agree that our post-pandemic workplace will never be the same. Even the word workplace as such suddenly seems outdated and perhaps even obsolete in some cases. So I think it has altered the way we think about work, the workplace, the workforce. And even if we don't yet know all the ways in which it will be different, if 2020 has shown us anything, it's that there is no one who can predict what comes next. The only constant what we can expect is really is change. And here I say that the most critical learning for me is that in this crisis, the importance of readiness and resilience. As managers and leaders, we must now lead the charge in ensuring that the systems, our infrastructure is adaptable to overcome any future disruption and uncertainty. So that is a huge responsibility. And I would also call for both empathy and action to guide our people and business through these uncertain times, because we are all undergoing unprecedented levels of stress and uncertainty. Some colleagues, unfortunately, have suffered deep personal losses from COVID-19. Parents stretching to navigate childcare and major uncertainties over schooling responsibilities while still meeting work commitments. We've already mentioned that. And then also the loss of even the basic physical connections, if I can say so, and the economic stress that may further lengthen our path to a better normal. So this creates huge levels of stress and uncertainty for our staff. And I already mentioned before the emotional well-being. So therefore, I think it requires both empathy and action on our part to lead our people and our organization forward. And with this in mind, what we are currently actually now working on, we've already initiated that before summer, and now this is a project which is really up and running, is the so-called building the new normal future of work. These terminologies have been used overall, but we're not reinventing the wheel here. But we have a corporate project which here with dedicated working groups now further analyzing certain areas, like, for example, what does it mean for post-COVID and what do we want to do to create greater degrees of remote and flexible work also beyond the crisis? How are we going to use technology? What will this mean for our office design with perhaps the potential for hot desking or a combination with hot desking? What will be the culture and behavioral shifts that will accompany this huge disruption? And also to build also organizational resilience by design. So these are all things that we're currently looking into, and where we mapping our vision based on the trends that we've observed, also the survey findings, which I mentioned earlier. And on that basis, we actually are also aiming to transform our organization for the better and to hopefully then have a sustainable COVID-19 future. So this is something to be continued. We're working on it, and we will also certainly provide further information on that very soon.
All right. Thank you, Sophie. I think what this pandemic has shown us is the importance, as you say, of resilience and making sure that we're able to respond to the different challenges despite the different disruptions that we face. And also it does give us that challenge of how to ensure that the recovery is as sustainable as possible. That leads me to really my final question for this podcast. I wanted to hear from both of you about how your organizations have managed to keep diversity and inclusion as part of your agenda. So of course, this is the theme really that the OMFIF Gender Balance Index is hinged on, and that's something that both your organizations have supported. So how do you make sure that despite all of this disruption and new challenges brought on, how do you ensure that that's still a part of your agenda and not something that is pushed to the sidelines? So perhaps, Emmanuel, I can start with you.
Actually, we haven't changed our agenda. So diversity remains one of our key concerns at board level for Mazar. So this is a key consideration. We are moving, but we think we're not moving fast enough. So tone at the top, like always, it's one key thing that our group CEO is really interested in it. All the board members are also willing to change the way we introduce diversity, and everything's moving. So there are many ongoing actions to make this happen. However, what I would say that the pandemic and COVID-19 and this crisis has not changed the priority we have in terms of diversity and inclusion. And so gender diversity is one thing, but we want also to go further than just gender. It's global diversity, not only gender diversity. And that is for us, as part of our commitment to society, a key thing. We want to be a firm which is global, inclusive, open. So, you know, because we are talking many time and often with you at VEF about our role in a larger view of ESG, and we consider that diversity is a big part of ESG. So this is our commitment for the future. And maybe you saw, but Mazar just refreshed his brand a couple of weeks ago. And this is, if you go and check our website and our brand launch, you'll see that diversity is part of it. So you can see that the pandemic hasn't changed anything. I would say the opposite. We use this as a springboard to be better committed to our global ESG impact.
That's great to hear. And I'm really happy that you've continued to support this project. And I think that's exactly what we want to hear. The pandemic hasn't actually interrupted the agenda, that it's still part very much of what you do. And I think you raised a very good point, which is that it's something that will be considered important if the tone is set at the top, if you have leadership that supports it. And that's what I would say is what we have in OMFIF, that we're doing this podcast, we're doing this project because we have a supportive management and a supportive board. I'll give the last word to Sophie. Sophie, tell us about how the ESM is continuing to make diversity a part of your agenda.
I think very, very similar to what Emmanuel said and what you just said, Kat. I think also for us, this is not an option to divert our focus away from diversity and inclusion. Leaving such issues unaddressed is simply not an option. It matters both in good times and bad. And I would even go further in saying that the way we now respond to this pandemic will shape our organization for years to come. So it's perhaps even more important than ever. Having said this, it's of course not easy. And what I hear from Emmanuel, we still grapple with the issues of course, also gender diversity. So this is still very high on our agenda. I would say where I see slight nuances and where we are now, is leading inclusively during these challenging times? I think it is harder. I think in the busiest and most trying times, human natures, for example, to default to people who feel familiar and safe. In normal times, this is already the case, but with this remote working, I see even a higher risk with fewer casual conversations and water cooler moments. Some employees may even find it harder to get access to senior leaders to make their voice heard. So therefore, and as already mentioned, our leaders remain in very close contact with all employees to nip feelings of alienation in the bud and to ensure that everyone is really included. It is a priority for us to be mindful of potential new forms of unconscious biases, because there may be such unconscious biases arising from this different way of working, and we need to moderate reactions accordingly, because I can imagine that indeed no longer having these conversations and working remotely, you may even have the fact that if use of video or not use of video, dress code issues, all these kind of things are coming up, but also different styles of living. So we here see that some unconscious biases are perhaps popping up, and we need to mitigate this. And therefore, we provide trainings not only to enhance our personal resilience, but also to find ways to help our teams to be more inclusive in such a remote and high-stress work environment, create healthy habits, and so on, and also to make sure that we are committed to develop also our talent also in this remote setting. Because I think the natural way of learning that some people may have, learning on the job by working closely with others, we here need to, while it's not impossible to replicate this in a remote setting, I think some of our actions need to be more actively managed. As I said, performance management, career management. I think we need to find new ways of working to make sure that everybody is included in this effort. And these are just to name a few of the initiatives where we're then saying is probably where I would say, yes, diversity and inclusion has remained for us a very important element, and even more so in these difficult times. And I think in terms of inclusion, we need to shift our attention to indeed make sure that that we are inclusive in this way of working, because by doing so, not only doing the right thing, it's also good for business. So I think here it goes without saying that these issues need to be addressed.
I think it sounds like we've covered two very important things there. First is the importance of leadership and making sure that we are able to receive that direction from the top, but also the importance of communication across all levels and making sure that we keep in touch. And earlier we were talking about mental health and the challenges of isolation. So I think for many reasons, that importance of communications, keeping in touch, checking in on your team, all of these things are very important for multiple goals, whether it's to make sure that everyone's okay, but also to make sure that we maintain the programs that we have to nurture each other, whether that's for diversity or other reasons or other goals. So I think we can wrap up there. We've covered a lot of insights. We've covered a lot of ground in this discussion, helpful practices that many different organizations can learn from. So I would like to thank both Sophie and Emmanuel for joining.